Welcome in to the latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Mark Brent. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter, and I'm joined as always by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Oh, you're rounded into season form, Shane. I can hear it on the other end. How you doing, brother?
It didn't take long, Mike. I just got to go back to the right hand, you know? It's like, why am I overthinking this? I can literally turn around and do this the right way. So, yes, I am ready to rock and roll. Saw my boy on the fine bomb today, huh?
Yeah, how about it, Shane? I mean, they hit me up, the producer over there, Danny. This is how it works, Shane. They send you a text. You never know when it's coming. They never give you a heads up. Can you make it? Paul Feinbaum show. And, of course, never going to say no to that text message. So I'm on the Paul Feinbaum. Never know what in the heck he's going to ask. And we've kind of went on a deep dive here on the world of podcasting. So for anybody that missed it, how about we kick it over to a little bit of the interview?
Yeah, let's check it out.
Being here on a Monday, we're inching toward the season as we heard the first major poll come out today, the coaches poll, where University of Texas got a first place vote. We blame it on our next guest, except he didn't vote in the coaches poll. Michael Brent joins us. How are you? It's been too long. What's going on?
Hey, doing great, Paul. And yes, I was not the one that voted Texas. I wouldn't even put him in the top 25, nonetheless, number one in the country.
Oh, my goodness. You're going to upset Nick Saban by saying that. He's going to try to build Texas up for that second week in Austin.
Right. And Texas does not deserve to be ranked. I'll say that now. And they don't deserve to be ranked when they lose by about 45 points. I don't think it'll be a 50-point ball game, but I think it'll be pretty close to that.
A 45-point game. So Michael coming out with fire. What else? I'm raising my arms and like, what else is new? So I haven't seen you in a few weeks. You were always on fire. What is motivating you these days to light the torch?
Well, kind of like Nick Saban, I'm over here in a rebuilding. I may have the number one rated pot. SEC podcast out there, but it's a rebuild year over here in Nashville, my home base.
I have to ask you this. I read something the other day. I think it was maybe Dan Patrick or Rich Eisen. I really don't remember which. I think it was Patrick who talked about in rather disparaging terms how everyone he knows now, I think he was speaking of Keith Olbermann, has a podcast. And I say that because there are they are like amoebas, are they not? Which I wonder, and I realize yours is a little bit different. It's not just the, let me grab somebody and do a podcast. But how do you live in that space that is getting very overcrowded these days?
Yeah, I mean, you're right on the money, Paul. I mean, and I'm just fortunate enough now that we live in an era to where, hey, I've worked for the big media outlets. I've worked for NFL.com. I've worked for FoxSports.com. I don't need them now. And believe it or not, I make more money now on my own than I do working for them. But it is, like you said, it's a crowded space. And I may be telling on myself a little bit here, but there's nothing special about what I'm doing. I'm just putting in the work. I'm putting in the hours. And literally anybody listening to this right now, if they need a pick-me-up, they could do what I do. I just go out there and put out the work. And heck, I even help them get off the ground. So it's a wild era we're living in here, Paul, but if you put in the work, a lot of people will start listening to you, and that's where we're at with my show.
Michael, I really like your confidence, and you back it up. So not that you're offering a tutorial to many out there who are saying, I got my own podcast. What do you do that you think differentiates you from the average bear?
Well, really, at our show, that SEC podcast, I mean, we truly believe we're the only ones that cover the SEC like it deserves. I mean, we had people calling us out, Paul, when old Chad Morris was up there at Arkansas. They said we talked more Razorback football than we did at Alabama Crimson Tide, which was on to number six national championship down there. But that's what you got to do because the SEC is just so full of these rabid fan bases. I say one bad thing about Kentucky, I got to hear about it for a month. I say one bad thing about A&M, I got to hear about it for a month. And instead of looking at that as a problem, I look at it as these people deserve all the attention we can give them, all the coverage we can give them, and they just eat it up. So, hey, I'm just fortunate to be here.
We went through a period, and happened where I work as well, where we were in a literal hot take environment, where not only were there too many hot takes, I mean, they sounded contrived. I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but how do you avoid getting that perception that, oh, this guy's just saying it to get whatever?
Well, I may certainly be guilty of that on your show, Paul, but you've got a wide audience here. I'm trying to get the message out, but, you know, you can't do that. I don't want to name names, but there are people in our industry, for sure, it seems like they do that. All right, Skip Bayless is the number one. People call me SEC Skip now. I mean, you tune into the show 5 days a week, sometimes six. You're not going to get nothing but an hour of hot takes. You're going to get an hour of full coverage. Now, when I'm on the Paul Feinbaum show, maybe I do have some fire takes. Just get the word out there on the show. They may hate me, but they keep my name in their mentions, and it does well for my business.
And in terms, I'm thinking about leaving all of this and starting my own little podcast in the corner. So I'm trying to get some tips. So I apologize for, should have called you off the air, but I didn't have your number. And since we have you now, I'll abuse you. You're right. I mean, Bayless, I mean, he has said things that are just patently absurd, but he's not the only one. Closer to the space that we're in right now, which is the SEC. Go ahead and call out some people and let's clear this up right now, Michael.
Well, certainly Danny Cannell would be another one I'd throw into that mix. I mean, I don't know what the hell he's saying.
Michael, I will interrupt you, but does Danny Cannell even count as legitimate?
Well, he was a couple of years ago, but he still works for one of those big outlets, I do believe.
I say that because I used to do college football live with him every day, and I mean, it was just a matter of how many eye rolls could you make when he would castigate Nick Saban or someone else, and it became and again, I know what Danny's up to. I was kidding, of course. So you mentioned, hey, I like this, by the way. Let's call out a few more people. You call that Skip Bayless. You call that Danny Cannell. Anyone else you'd like to simply destroy their career before our segment ends?
No, and by no means am I taking shots at these people. They are more famous and doing better than I am. But
not after this interview.
I admire the work of others people, and certainly I take from some people, and I learn what not to do from others. Let's just put it there.
Well, I respect that Mike. Michael, I really do, because you do it in a way that, I mean, some people are, I mean, you see it a mile away. Here they come around the corner, you go, okay, here we go. And I'm not going to mention any of their names. I'll save that for a book. But I'm particularly curious when you
can check out the full clip on our YouTube page. We want to check Paul having a good time and mocking me on a nationally televised audience. But I appreciate any time he gives me on there, and hopefully I never say anything too dumb, even though I burned the Texas Longhorns on this one.
Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Mike. You know, one of the things you talked about was just the actual podcast itself and why it's successful. It's successful because of the listeners. It's successful because of every fan base, not just two or three of them. And, you know, I'm glad you highlighted that, because if it weren't for the listeners, you wouldn't be on Feinbaum. Right. We wouldn't be going to Media Days. We wouldn't be growing as quick as we are. And we do that because, dude, we listen, man. I'm my DMs are always open. I listen to everybody. I follow everybody back that I can. And, you know, I am embedded into the SEC, and that's because of listeners like you guys. So I just wanted to kind of highlight that, Mike, because that really resonated with me.
Yeah, and hey, while we're on the subject, I don't want to bombard people with this same message every time, but if you haven't already, give us that 5-star written review on the Apple Podcast app or Spotify, or just follow us on YouTube. We're really trying to get the YouTube going. You do any of those, send that on over. Let us know at thatsecpodcast@gmail.com, and we send you a beer koozie free of charge. We got to be the only show that's mailing people beer koozies free of charge.
I know. Your postman thinks you got alcohol problems, man. How many did you send out today? 25?
Yeah, and I do apologize for some people. We were getting a lot of the emails were going to the spam folder, so I cleared that out. I sent about 20 here on Monday, Shane. So
love it.
Beer koozies are going to be headed everyone's way. And we got people, Shane, no lie, from Japan, California, Iowa, all over the SEC. It's wild to think of all the people that are listening to this show.
Japan and Iowa. I like how you lump those two together. It's, might as well be the same place, Mike.
Well, to me, it kind of is. You know, if you're outside the
SEC.
Have
you ever been to Iowa?
I'm sure I've driven through it. Nothing but corn, right?
Dude, I ain't ever seen anything like it, man. It was so damn flat. You could stand on a box and see the other side of the state. It blew my mind. It just, because I'm around mountains. Right. Been around mountain my whole time. The only time I'm not around a mountain is when I go to a beach.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been out west. And, man, we made a trip out west, and I'm sitting there in the middle of Iowa, and I'm just like, God, man, I have never – I mean, this is farms on steroids. That's all it is. You know what I'm saying? Big-ass tractors flying around everywhere. It was – yeah, it took me a lot. It's like me going to New York City and looking at all those big buildings. I was looking at all these big farms, you know. So, kudos to the man or woman. We sent one out there in Iowa. You deserve a beer.
No doubt. Well, Jade, hey, on with the show. We've got a number of clips to get to around the SEC with camps underway. But before we get to that, Shane – I don't know if you saw the news here on Monday, but the preseason coaches poll was released.
Oh, yeah.
And, man, do we got some issues with this list. So we only have 6 SEC teams rated, Shane. I think that's not enough for sure. Mm-hmm. But here are the 6 that were ranked in the coaches poll. Alabama, number 1, no surprise. Georgia, number 3. Again, that was expected. A&M, mm-hmm. number 7.
Ooh.
I think the Aggies may be feeling a little disrespect there.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky, number 21. How about that, Shane?
Ooh.
Wildcats getting some love. Arkansas, number 23. Too low. Mm. And Ole Miss, 24, which that surprised me. I'm not going to lie, Shane. I thought Ole Miss would, you know, I know they're coming off a Sugar Bowl appearance and everything like that. But kind of surprised to see the Rebels ranked in the preseason. How about you?
Mike. My volunteers have worked too hard to be in the others receiving votes category.
Yeah, so that was the top 25, Shane. We also had a number in the others receiving votes
that's
category.
That's what I said. When you listen to this later, I'm going to say we've worked too damn hard to be in the group other receiving votes. So who are the other SEC teams that got at least a vote in?
So 28, Tennessee right there, mm-hmm. which I agree with you. I think the Vols should be ranked in the preseason. Number 30, LSU. And how about this, Shane? I don't want to miss the stat here, but I saw someone post it. LSU's been rated in the preseason poll for 20 straight years until today. So that's just wild to think. LSU, number 30.
Mm-hmm.
Auburn, 31. How about that? The Tigers getting some respect. And I think this is the most disrespected team. I mentioned it on Paul Feinbaum's show, Shane. 36, Mississippi State. Come on, get them in the top 25. You know
this,
what?
This is what I'm talking about, Mike. Because you got I hate this. I say it every year, Mike. Every time this damn list comes out,
yeah.
It's the dumbest list ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't tell me right now. You put every team in here, and let's just pretend for a second all 120 whatever teams are in the SEC, and we have an opportunity to play. You cannot tell me that there are only 6 teams that are in the SEC, they're going to be in the top 25 at the end of that, because there are more top 25 teams in this conference than any conference out there combined, in my opinion.
Yeah, no doubt, Shane. And that's before we even get to wild cards. Florida, they were voted number 37.
Exactly.
And South Carolina, 46, who we expect to take a big jump this fall. I mean, any of those teams I could see being ranked. And, you know, perhaps maybe a surprise or two.
Can you do the quick 25? Can you do just a quick rundown?
Yeah.
Okay.
Alabama, of course, number 1. Already mm-hmm. mentioned that. Ohio State, number 2. Georgia, 3. Clemson, 4.
Garbage.
Notre Dame, 5. Notre Dame. Michigan.
They know 6. Kelly's not there anymore, right?
Michigan, 6. A&M, 7. Utah, 8. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma, number 9. Baylor, 10. Oklahoma State, 11. 12 Oregon, 13 NC State. My God, NC State. Michigan State, 14. Southern Cal, which I think won like five games last year, they're 15. Uh-huh. Pitt, 16. Miami, 17. How about this, Shane? 18, Texas. They got a first-place vote. Someone voted the damn Texas Longhorns as number one in the country. Wake Forest, 19. Wisconsin, 20. 21, Kentucky. 22, Cincinnati. 23, Arkansas. 24, Ole Miss. And 25, Houston. If Houston was in the SEC, Shane, Auburn, I know they lost to them in the bowl game, but, hell, in a regular season, they beat the hell out of Houston, wouldn't they?
Oh, my God, Mike. Just this list drives me nuts. Oklahoma State. Damn Gundy and them. This drives me nuts because everybody knows. You put Baylor and Mississippi State against each other, Mississippi State wins that game 99 out of 100 times. That's just my personal opinion. Now, I may be wrong. I may be a little biased. Somebody asked me the other day. I saw it on Twitter. They said, why are you so low on, I think he said, BYU and Cincinnati? Right. And I just told them I'm extremely biased. I am. I love the SEC. But you cannot tell me that some of those teams that are in the top 25 even the Kentucky Wildcats. So you're saying that if Baylor and Kentucky play right now, you would have Baylor winning? You're telling me right now you've got, did you say USC? USC?
Number 15, yeah.
Number 15, USC. USC and let's go with one of ours, Arkansas, go against each other. You know, you're telling me that USC is going to win that game? No, I mean, that's the way you should be looking at it when you're voting the top 25. Neutral site, these teams facing each other. And if you can, in good conscience, think that USC Trojan, then you don't know the SEC. You don't know the landscape of college football, in my opinion. So I'm getting off the box here, Mike. But these top 25s, that's the beautiful thing. At the end of the season, we'll know exactly who the best damn teams go, because I guarantee you right now it's going to be an SEC team holding that trophy up.
Right. I mean, I'm convinced at this point, Shane, they just put out these damn lists to get us to talk about the sport. You know what?
I think you may be right, man. It got me all fired up.
Well, brother, you ready to go around the SEC?
I bet Saban did it. I bet Nick Saban put Texas on it. He needed that motivation to play that ball game.
Hey, real quick here, Shane and Lexington, just a quick little note. But Joe Williams, the defensive back, entered the transfer portal. And that's interesting, Shane, because he was, I don't want to say projected to start, but he was in the battle to start. They lost Vito Tisdale in the spring to season-ending injury. So, you know, two guys that in the spring you could make the argument could be starting for Kentucky in the defensive backfield. No, not going to be – I mean, there's always a case Joe Williams returns, but I think that's unlikely at this point in time. They have added via the transfer portal to shore up that defensive backfield, but it's always interesting when someone leaves in the middle of camp. It probably suggests – maybe he was losing that starting role, but I always like to see guys fight through it and try to earn that job. You know what?
Yeah, I do too, because, you know, who you are now in August is not who you're going to be in the middle of October.
Right.
And
just
and
look at Hendon
need,
Hooker.
I don't like this because I think we don't know the story, so I don't want to speculate, but it looks bad. You know, you enter the portal. Well, the coach that's going after you knows that you gave up on your team on second week, you know, in the first week of camp. So I just don't think it's a good look. I don't think it helps these guys trying to get to the next level. I think you play it out, man. You've already committed. You've made it. I mean, you've made it to August. You should just, in my opinion, play. And then at the end of this season, if you can go somewhere else, great. You know, I understand you're trying to get to the league, but, you know, every time a challenge comes up, you got to run away. So, again, I'm speculating. Don't want to do that because it may be something else totally different, and I just hate to see it.
Well, next, Shane, let's kick it on down to College Station, where we got some pretty good comments here from co-offensive coordinator Dale Dickey and co-offensive coordinator James Coley. But before we get to those comments, Shane, because what they're really centered on is just all the weapons that they have to work with on the offensive side of the ball in College Station. And it's natural. We all do it, Shane. We've been doing it for months. Who's going to win a starting job at Texas A&M? But the more buzz you get out of College Station, the more people you interact with. It's not that the quarterback battle doesn't matter, but I think people have confidence regardless of who that is. Even if it's the true freshman Connor Wigman, because if he were to win the job, and I'm not saying he's going to, but if he would, I think you'd say, well, my God, he must be lights out during camp.
Yeah.
But more importantly, he's just surrounded by elite talent. We know Devon Achain. Hell, you're hyping him up as a dark horse for the Heisman. Anaya Smith, who, hey, his suspension's over. He's on the field. He's leading the way. So one of the best receiver running back slash guys in the country. We've got Evan Stewart, the five-star freshman at receiver. Jake Johnson, the number one tight end in the country. This may finally be the offense that Jimbo Fisher has envisioned since he's been down there at College Station. I love hearing these coaches talk about the ability to make a short, simple play and explode it for a touchdown, because really that's the difference in college football is having elite talent. That's what Georgia, LSU, and Alabama have had their national championship years. And it sounds like Texas A&M is finally where they want to be right there, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. You think Aggie fans are pumped up? Listen to these coaches. Clip it and make it a hype reel. These guys are fired up about what they got on offense.
You kind of got the unique position of having coached the quarterbacks, and now you're coaching the tight ends. As a whole, how does this offense look to you from your perspective compared to the last couple of years?
Well, as I said, we've probably got more guys with outstanding talent across the board than we've had. Our offensive line is very physically talented, strong, young. But we do have more depth than we've ever had. We got more guys we think we could put in a game up front than we've had at any time. Same thing with tight end. We're kind of back to Jay Sternberger year, where we didn't know much about him. He came in and had an unbelievable year. Then he left after that year, and we went with a freshman, Jalen Wiedermeyer, or he emerged through the course of it. We're looking for who's really going to emerge and be the guy, or we would really like to have two or three of them emerge, because we like to play with two tight ends in the game a lot of the time. So, again, we're very talented there. We're just inexperienced. The group I'm most excited about is our wide receivers. This is one of the fastest groups of wide receivers, most talented groups of wide receivers I've seen. We do have some experience at the wide receiver position, but we also have some young talent that is going to create a lot of competition at that position. The quarterback race is a very competitive battle. We got some young men that one guy has SEC experience, Max Johnson, but is learning this offense new. And we're very different on offense. So in the spring, they were all kind of – actually, Haynes had a little more, obviously, more experience in this offense, which is, you know, as important as playing in games. He doesn't have a whole lot of game experience, but he's been on the field in this offense, and he's had the most snaps in this offense. And Connor is just an extremely talented guy. And from what I've seen, he's figuring it out. You know, in the spring, he was just learning the system, he's still making great plays, and he's doing the same thing now. And I think Coach Craig, who played quarterback in this system, will do a great job bringing those guys along with Coach Fisher. So goes back to running back now. I think everybody knows about Devon Achain and what he brings to us. He's one of the most dynamic players in all of college football. We've got a couple of young guys, Amari Daniels and LJ Johnson, competing for his backup role. Do not forget about a freshman named Le'Veon Moss. But to sum it up overall, we've got the weapons, we've got the skill, we've got the ability to be an outstanding offense, to be explosive, to be able to grind it out, to be able to do all the things Coach Fisher wants to do from an offensive standpoint. We've just got to figure out who's going to be doing the bulk of it at each position, and I think that competition is going to carry on throughout the season. And, you know, sometimes, having been in this a long time, the younger guys that haven't done it a lot, they're hungrier, and that's what we need. We've got a talented team, and we've got a lot of competition out there, but we need to be hungry. We need to be striving to work for to gain everything that we possibly can. So it's going to be an exciting year. and we just want it to be a successful year as well.
Coach, what does Evan Stewart add to this offense, and is he the kind of guy that you foresee just making an immediate impact as a true freshman?
Yeah, so far, I mean, he's added his speed is when you're watching it on video or you're watching it in, you know, live on the field, you know, it's there. I mean, the DBs feel it. You know, he's explosive, so he's fast in short areas and he's fast with long speed, and that all helps route runners get open. You know, when you can be as explosive as he is, he's also very bright, extremely intelligent. So he brings a really good package to that room, you know, especially as young as he is. And, you know, he's a prideful kid who takes a lot of pride in being prepared and, you know, having his toolbox, his skill set ready to go for practice.
Coach, I know you mentioned a lot of the downfield passing, but how nice is it with this speed now that maybe you can throw a bubble or a 5-yard slant and they can take it to the house? I mean, does that play it different too? I mean, that has to help too, right?
Absolutely. You know, that's you know, stolen. Those are yards you steal, right, because of the leverage maybe the defense may give you because of who you have in the backfield, right? That guy in the back of the room right there, right? So if they want to be stingy in the box, you know, and you're throwing a bubble out there to a guy who has speed, that may could be the fastest guy on the team or could just be a guy who's long and fast and strong and is hard to tackle. So that adds an element to your game, being explosive along with going deep.
I mean, yeah, and how could you not be listening to that? So, again, quarterback.
I mean, he went total fanboy, didn't he? He was like, what, offensive linemen? Yeah, we're deep and good. Tight ends? We got 100 of them. Don't know who's going to catch it. Doesn't matter. Five-star talent, you know. Receivers? Don't even get me started on these guys. Probably the fastest people I've ever met in my entire life, and I've been coaching forever. So, yeah, no, I'm all in, man. This is making my $100 lock of the year, you know, a little bit more exciting hearing this kind of news coming out of College Station.
Yeah, no doubt. And it just goes back to what I was saying, Shane. I mean, certainly we'll monitor who wins that quarterback race, but may not matter with all the weapons, because whoever they put out there, they are going to have a lot of help this fall in College
Absolutely.
Station. You know what? Now, hey, maybe their biggest contenders here in the West, Shane. Let's kick it all down to Tuscaloosa, where, oh boy, when we're talking about Bryce Young just scratching the surface and getting better as a player, my God, I mean, that should scare each and every one of us, Shane. But that's kind of the message Bill O'Brien, he gets to speak to the media once a year, twice if they make the college football playoff. So we had to use his comments here to hypes up Bryce Young and the improvements he's made this offseason, as well as incoming receivers Jermaine Burton and Tyrell Harrell from Louisville. How are those guys fitting into the Alabama offense? Let's kick it over to Bill O'Brien.
You mentioned the wide receiver group in your opening. You guys have to replace a lot of production there, but you added a couple of veteran players from the transfer portal. Just what do you think that Jermaine Burton and Tyler Harrell can bring to this offense?
Yeah, those guys have stepped in with the addition of, you know, Ja'Cory Brooks coming back from last year, some of the younger players that have stepped in. It's a very hardworking group. They're well coached by Coach Wiggins. He does a really good job with that group. It's a group that has, again, kind of like the offensive line, a mixture of veteran players, whether they came from other programs, and also this mixture of young guys that are in that group. So working very hard early in training camp. We like the presence that Jermaine Burton has brought to that position. Tyler Harrell, the presence that those guys have brought to that position. But again, just like the offensive line, it'll continue to develop over time. We're early in camp, like I've said, and we'll see how it all shakes out over the next few weeks.
With that group, what have you seen in terms of the challenge from the guys who returned at receiver when they have two transfers come in and compete with that?
I think that's a great question. I think that's the way of the world in college football, right? I mean, I'll leave a lot of that to Coach Saban, and he can, you know, I'm sure he's been asked about that. But, you know, I think when you think about the portal and you think about the different things, you know, that's just the way it is. You know, you're always going to try to do what's best for your football team. That's what Coach Saban always tries to do. And so if there's a guy out there or two guys out there that you think can help your football team and they're interested in coming here, then that's, you know, something that we'll always explore. So the addition of those guys, they're hardworking guys. They're good guys. They're good teammates. It's been, to me, at this point, a seamless transition.
You brought up Bryce Young in your opening statement, and I wanted to ask about, you know, the benefits of being able to have him in your system for a second season. You already had a great year last year, but, you know, what room for improvement do you see in his game, and is there room for improvement?
There's always room for improvement. You know, I think when you look at last year, you know, we studied a lot of you know, his play last year, what we did offensively last year. We've got some new staff members that have brought in new ideas. We've talked to Bryce about these new ideas in addition to maybe some things, you know, we both can improve on. You know, I'm in this offense for the second year. He's going into his third year in this offense. You know, so hopefully you'll see improvement just in knowledge of scheme and how to use that scheme against the different defenses we're going to see. But Bryce is always looking to improve. Every single day he comes in there, he's, you know, somebody that goes out to the practice field and really is striving for perfection every single day, and that's a great guy to coach.
Shane, did you know Bryce Young? I mean, is it possible to be even better at football than he was last year?
Well, I love it. He's like, you know, the only way he can get better is if he watches himself play and then critique himself and make himself a little bit better. You know, I mean, what do you do with a Heisman winner? You know, it's like, no, you obviously – it's coach speak. You got to come out. You got to say there's always room for improvement. But but that's where we're at with Bryce, man. We are fine-tuning. We are creating a first pick of the NFL draft potentially here. And you do that by the small details. So, obviously, there are some things that he can work on. They didn't hold the national championship trophy at the end of the year. And that's their motivation. And it starts with Bryce. It ends with Bryce. So, I think this is great, man. This is what you want to hear from a fan if you're an Alabama fan.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen this, Shane, but anybody that's missed it, go to Twitter and type in Bryce Young incompletion reel, and it's like 4 minutes of him just dropping incredible passes that his receivers are dropping. And I think the comment was his incompletion reel is better than most quarterbacks' actual reel. I mean, he's one of a kind, you know what?
He really is. They got him a good one. And we say it every year. You know, it's like Tua or Jalen. I mean, it doesn't matter. Alabama's been loaded at quarterback for a long time. And this is just another plug and play for them. This is another kid that's going to have longevity in the NFL.
Yeah. And same deal with Pete Golding, the defensive coordinator. We don't get him that often. It's too bad because he's got himself a personality, Shane.
This may be the last time we hear from him this year. Saban saw this video going viral. He's like, "What? Get in here, Pete."
Pete Golding on the recruiting pitch down there in Tuscaloosa and on if this will be his best defense yet down there in Tuscaloosa.
Hey, Coach, I know you're not able to talk about specific recruiting in the current climate. But you're known as a very effective recruiter. What is your approach in that living room and be able to convince a kid to come to Alabama?
Hey, I work for the greatest coach of all time at the University of Alabama. What the hell's wrong with you? No. So, I mean, I think recruiting has changed a little bit over the years. I mean, I think when I was Division II and 1AA, it was about, hey, who had the best relationship? Who was willing to outwork everybody else? All right, who's the guy that's going to help them make a decision or female that's going to help them make the decision? Right, and why can we do it better than anybody else? All right, well, it's still like that to some degree for some guys, but for most, let's be honest, it's not. Right? Does that make sense? So then at that point, now all they want to know is, hey, what is it in it for me? Right? So, hey, you get to learn under the leadership of the best coach to ever do it. Here's the strength and condition aspect of how we can make you better. So now, to me, you're using more of, all right, what do I have, right, to enhance, obviously, their experience as a student-athlete for them to get what they want, and that's the NFL. And in the process, how can you use the University of Alabama's brand, Nick Saban, to market your name, image, and likeness to allow you to make more money while you're enrolled as a student-athlete? And I think the University of Alabama, more importantly, I think Nick Saban allows young people to be able to do that better here than anywhere else. And I think so. If you got a good product and anything that you do, normally that's easier to sell. Now, you still got to develop a relationship. You still got to identify it, right, and give them what they need. So that's a piece of it. But to me, I'm who I am, you know, regardless who it is. And, you know, they're either like that, they don't. It's my responsibility to provide the information for them. Hopefully we have better stuff than everybody else and they make the best decision for them. So I think it kind of does it for itself.
Finish in the back. Hi, Pete. On paper, do you think that this team, this defense specifically, personnel-wise, has the chance to be the best, most talented group you've coached since you've been here at Alabama?
Yeah, I mean, I, be honest with you, I don't look at all that. You know, I mean, be honest with you, I come in every day. How can we improve today? When I normally leave this building tonight, I feel like we're about to get our ass whooped. You know, it's just normally that type of day, right? And then we show back up the next day, and how can we take one step? So, you know, we're fortunate to have some good players. They still got to prepare the right way, practice the butt off so we can get it on Saturday. But we've had great players here in the past, you know, so it's buying in, doing the right thing, competing every day, right, pulling people with you, and let's see what happens.
All right, Pete, thanks for your time.
All right, appreciate it, guys.
Thank you, Coach.
Oh boy, yeah, Pete got a talking to down here, you know what?
That's right, got his charger taken away for a few days.
All right, next change, sticking in the SEC West, the Arkansas Razorbacks, and Sam Pittman spoke recently for about 30 minutes, but there was only one quote that I really picked out of here, and I thought it was important, which, you know, it was kind of something you were hitting on, Shane, with just when we were talking about the over-unders on the last episode. Go check that out if you missed it. But, hey, the margin for error is just so small in the SEC West, and it's, you know, it's short yardage. It's two-point conversions. Remember, had they scored a two-pointer at Ole Miss last year, they would have won that thrilling game.
Yeah.
But it literally comes down to fine-tuning the most important aspects of the game, and that is something that Sam Pittman harps upon, because Arkansas, they're not satisfied with just winning 8 regular season games and 9 right. in the bowl game. They want to take that next step. How do they do it? Let's kick it over to Sam Pittman.
You know what it took to take the program from where you got it to where you finished last year. What's it take to get maybe next level? Where can y'all be better?
Well, I think you have to do everything you possibly can in preparation and those things. I think that's an obvious answer. You know, we have to become the best coaches that there is out there, and I have a great staff. But to win more than 9 games, there's so many close games and situational football we have to be very, very good at. And I'm talking about 3rd-and-1, some things that we didn't do well last year. I'm talking about 2-minute, which we did do well last year. I'm talking about 4-minute, where we've got the lead and we need to complete the game. Now, those things are going to be determined how many wins you have and taking care of the football. And I thought we did a good job of taking care of the football until the 2-minute drive at the end of the game on offense. And I thought the defense rallied around really well, ran well today, did a good, nice job. But those are the things to win more than that. First of all, you have to have, you know, a quarterback that can lead you to that. But, you know, we have one that led us to 9 last year. So we've got the quarterback situation. We just got to be better in situational football. So when those situations come up again, we win those more than we lose them. And therefore, we can win a close game. We're going to have a lot of close games. That's just how it is in this league.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, are you buying what he's selling here where it's, you know, it's those fine details that's going to take the Razorbacks over the top if they're able to do it this year?
Absolutely, man. I think about some of the comments Bill Belichick said. You know, it's all aspects. I mean, he spends as much time on special teams than he does on offense and defense because, let's face it, one bad special teams play and then the game is all out of whack. You know, you're playing from behind. That 4-minute offense, that nobody talks about that as much as they should, but how many times have you sat there as a fan on the edge of your seat praying to God you don't give up this lead? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You got to run the clock for 4 minutes. So they're going through that. Arkansas is going to have plenty of games where they're ahead, and they need to finish those ball games. They do, you know, he talks about there's going to be a lot of close games. There will be. It's the SEC, man. You don't. There's always going to be some tight ball games on Saturday, and it's those details. If you mess up and if you're not paying attention, you don't know what your teammate's supposed to be doing, or you don't know what you're supposed to be doing, you let the whole team down. So that's very important.
Yeah, and that's one reason I love the Razorbacks, Shane, because, you know, you talk to people around the sport, and it's like an epidemic of not being able to develop offensive linemen. And right. We know that ain't going to be an issue up there in Fayetteville, where Sam Pittman and company, Cody Kennedy, the offensive line coach, they've worked with this group. They got 4 or 5 back on the starting unit. They're going to be able to lean on people in the fourth quarter like they've not been able to do under Sam Pittman to this point, and I think that could make a critical difference for them, particularly later in the season when mm-hmm. defenses start to get worn out a little bit. You know what?
Absolutely.
Now, last little item here, Shane, let's kick it on down to Baton Rouge. Never heard from this guy before, but old Mike Denbrock, the offensive coordinator, you know, he's going to be instrumental in picking the quarterback yep. down there for the LSU Tigers. And I thought this was some pretty interesting comments, Shane, on you know, what he looks for in a quarterback, the timeline for doing it. And a lot of people I've heard, Shane, they say, well, when they were at Cincinnati, he liked to run the quarterback a lot. So, obviously, Jaden Daniels, the transfer from Arizona State, he's got a leg up in this thing because he's the more mobile guy. But that's not necessarily how they're going to be doing it here in Baton Rouge. So let's kick it over to Mike Denbrock.
Hi, Coach. Leah Van from The Advocate. When you're looking at this quarterback competition, what criteria does that starting quarterback have to meet in your eyes?
Yeah, I mean, I think, number one, we want someone who can run the system of offense that we're putting in. And it's an adjustable system. So it doesn't, and that doesn't mean, hey, well, I remember where Coach came from, so that must mean this guy's got a leg up. It doesn't mean that. What it means more is what's in place for our offensive unit with the skill players that we have and who we have offensively playing to the strengths of that unit. So whoever really commands that the best and really who kind of takes ownership of the offense, We're looking for those guys to compete with each other, of course. But we're also looking for those guys to kind of somebody step out in front. Somebody take the reins of this thing and really kind of be that guy that everybody looks to that upholds the standard of playing quarterback at LSU. And so those things in particular, yeah, of course, we don't want somebody who throws interceptions or fumbles the ball around or doesn't know how to check protections. But more than anything, I think the strength of the unit a lot of times, and especially we're a very quarterback-driven system, that guy's got to have command of what we're doing out there.
Brody Miller with The Athletic. Just to bounce off that, I guess, you know, what is your kind of – do you have a main no-no with quarterbacks or your main kind of thing that's an issue for you when you're evaluating them?
Turnovers. Got to take care of the ball. I mean, it starts there, right? And we all – you know, this is – you know, I'm not saying anything that everybody in this room doesn't already know, but – the most valuable asset you have offensively is the possession of the ball, and you can't give those away. You got to be steadfast and make sure that doesn't happen. So that's number one for sure.
Evan, just is there a point this fall where you guys would ideally like this quarterback thing to kind of get settled and just kind of
today?
What the,
okay. Yes. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, there comes a line of demarcation of, you know, we've got to get ready to win game one, and who gives us the best opportunity to do that. We're not, as you know, anywhere close to that yet, but, you know, that those decisions will be made by Coach Kelly, obviously, when the cutoff happens, and hopefully it's an easy decision. Maybe somebody actually really separated themselves enough where it's so obvious that the decision happens sooner. Maybe there's two guys that are just battling each other, and it's awesome. You know what I mean? Maybe there's three. You know, the more the merrier at times, but we also got to get ready to play the season and get ready to win football games.
Hey, Coach, Josh Sibley with One Team, One Pod. With this younger O-line, how much do you think a mobile quarterback is necessary, and how much do you change your play calling between quarterbacks?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much the play calling in particular would change. Maybe some of the options off the plays would change is from a play calling standpoint. I think mobility is a key anytime at the quarterback position, especially when you're playing against some of the dynamic athletes that there are up front in SEC defenses. So that's always, I think, a good thing to have, but I don't think it's necessary the defining thing that's going to make the decision.
Mike Wilson-Alexander from The Advocate. When it comes to Jaden Daniels specifically, Brian Kelly said kind of at the end of the spring that y'all had adjusted his footwork since coming from Arizona State. How much of a change was that for him? And is it something that he seems more comfortable with now?
Well, I don't think it's finished yet. You know what I mean? I mean, like it says, you know, the old saying is it takes, what, 10,000 reps to master a skill. You know, we've been dinking with his footwork a little bit here through the spring and then through fall camp in the summer. And I doubt if he's probably got 10,000 reps at it yet. So, I mean, it's an ongoing process. I think what we're trying to to garner from getting his lower body right is really the consistency necessary to throw the ball in a little bit more accurately. And Coach Kelly and Coach Sloan are all over that. So that's kind of their department.
All right, Shane. So, hey, again, that gives us no indication of who this damn quarterback is going to be. I mean, every time I get an update from Baton Rouge, I'm more confused about who's going to be starting. But
It is funny because in your mind, you're like, you're narrowing the race. You know what I'm saying? It's right. Like, all right, we're down to two guys for sure. And then he gets out here and goes, well, it could be three of them. I don't know, you know. And it's like, I was like, no, I don't want that. You know, he would love, but I do love the fact, I mean, he pointed out he wants to know sooner than later. Mm-hmm. And obviously they don't know now. I mean, it's August 9th, but you got it. You're going to have to fine tune it. And you may not have a definitive one, but somebody's going to step up and get a bulk of those first. And that's what I think Kelly's going to do. I think he's going to identify who he thinks the guy should be and let those other guys play in. But man, it sounds like a thick competition down there, brother.
Now let me ask you, Shane, do you think that's something they should keep close to the vest considering they open against Florida State in New Orleans, or is it something you think it benefits? You know, we've seen it at other places where they name the starting quarterback a couple weeks out.
No, I think it benefits. You know, I get that if you've got a couple of and I hate to compare the two, but like Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Those are two different type quarterbacks. I could understand maybe keeping that to your vest. You know, you've got a mobile threat with Wright, and you've got more of the arm with the
Ken Seals?
Yeah, with Seals. You know, that makes sense to me. That doesn't make sense in LSU because I think, you know, I think mobile is. I mean, I guess you could throw that as a possibility, but I don't think that's our dude, man. Right. I think the quarterback comes down to, I don't know. I was thinking Nussmeier, but I don't know about what you're thinking. But again, that's my quarterback race. That's who I'm imagining running this team next year. But I may be dead wrong. But it just seems like to clear the noise. How many times have we heard that? You know, Alabama did the same thing. A few years back with Jalen and Tua, and it was everything. It crowded the locker room, and I think it divided at times, you know, that room. So I think you come out, you say, okay, this is our guy, so that everybody can buy into him, and then the whole team knows. Now, it doesn't mean it's permanent. Doesn't mean he keeps the position. It's still an open competition, just like every spot on this field. But until we find otherwise, you know, ABC, this is the current roster rotation.
Yeah, and I can't wait to find out because, hey, the
who
season.
Who do you think's a quarterback? Like, if you were guessing right now.
You know, I'm kind of with you. I love Garrett Nussmeier, but I honestly, Shane, I want to see it be Miles Brennan because he stuck it out, man. And I think it's almost like, you know, he's worth being able to show what because the brief time we saw him, he was incredible. So I'm kind of rooting for Miles Brennan, but I certainly do think Garrett Nussmeier by the end of the season is going to be your starting quarterback.
And to agree with you there, I mean, I'm with you, but Miles, you think about the detail. I mean, how many times did he say he doesn't want turnovers? And you usually get a little bit better ball security with somebody that's been in a system for a long period of time. And that's an added benefit to seniority, added benefit to college playing time, you know. So I'm with you. I think starting out of the gate, it's going to be tough to keep Miles off the field just because he's done it a lot. I don't know. I just don't know if that's the future for LSU. He's had plenty of opportunities and he's kind of squandered them. So,
right.
But I'm glad he hasn't transferred out. I'm glad he's stuck around in there and I'm with you. It's kind of like a version of Stetson Bennett, you know. It's like, you know, he could have went somewhere else. He could have played. He even tried it, you know, but he came right back to Georgia and it turns out it'd be a great move for him. So I'm hoping that if Miles does stick around, then it's a good thing for him.
Yeah. And throw another curveball at it, Shane. I mean, you talk to people down there in Baton Rouge, they, they say the coaches love Jaden Daniels. So, hell, yeah. I have no indication who it's going to be. But Jaden Daniels, if he can play like he did as a freshman, he'll be the starting quarterback. But yeah, that was 3 years ago. You know what?
Yeah. No, good point, man.
But hey, buddy, I think that's going to wrap us up for this episode of the show. You got anything mm-hmm. before we hop off the line?
Wait, we ain't got a list to go through? We got real football news? No, I love this, Mike. You know, we hit around on a few teams. Who are you planning on having on tomorrow? You got any previews of coaches that are going to be talking?
I didn't intentionally do this, but when I was putting it together, you know, this is kind of SEC West heavy. So next episode, try to go some SEC East, hit on as many East teams as we can on the next episode. Okay.
All right. I love it, man. I love the news. Love the fine bomb segment, man. I tell you what, I love the fans. I love the koozies going out. Can't wait to see some cold beers in those. And it's getting close, man. It is so damn close. I cannot wait for some college. They got NFL. And I'm watching a little bit of this preseason stuff. You know, I got to get a little feel, you know.
It's not.
It's not my favorite. It's like that old version. It's the appetizer, you know, for me. Don't get me wrong, I love cheese sticks, but I didn't come to this restaurant to eat cheese sticks. You know what I'm saying?
So you came for the steak.
That's right, and it's right. I can see them preparing it around the corner here, so I'm ready for some college football, man. That's for sure.
Well, no doubt, I'm right there with you, brother. Well, I appreciate you as always. I appreciate each and every one of you for continuing to check us out. The season's right around the corner, and we get you ready for it. And we'll catch you on the next one.
All right, see you guys. Go Vols. Why is my analogies always food? I think I got a problem, Mike. Thank you.